Me the book of Ruth, please. The book of Ruth. So good to be back with you this evening. It was a beautiful afternoon. It's a beautiful sunny summer day, and it's so good to be with you this evening. This last week, Hannah, Natalie, Jessica, and myself were at a camp where we looked at the book of Ruth, and it was a blessing just to focus on one book and one character, many characters, throughout the week. And what I'd like to do this evening is share with you just a few thoughts from the book of Ruth. This evening, I don't have a PowerPoint, and the sermon's going to be a little bit different in format from what I typically have. Typically, I have a pretty static organization that I use in sermons. Tonight, what I want to do is I just want to study through the book of Ruth. We're not going to have time to read through every last verse. There's times that I'm going to give summary, but I just want to overview the book of Ruth, see what the plot of the story is, and then draw just a couple of lessons from this book. So let's introduce the book of Ruth real quick. The book of Ruth was written during the time of the judges, and you'll remember during the time of the judges, overall, God's people are very faithless. This book, however, shows various characters who are faithful to God, and one of the lessons from the book is showing that there were people still faithful to God during this time. Ruth herself is a Moabite, or Moabitess, depending on your translation, who was brought into Israel because of her mother-in-law, and by a very what seems to be inconsequential life, becomes of great importance as she enters into the lineage of David, then ultimately into the lineage of Christ. Also, one interesting note about this book, in our Bibles, the book of Ruth comes after Judges. You've inferred because it happened during the time of the Judges. But in the Hebrew Bible, the book of Ruth came after Proverbs. Now, the reason it came after the book of Proverbs is you'll remember in Proverbs 31, we read of the worthy woman or the virtuous woman. The book of Ruth refers to her as this in 3:11. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask to all my fellow townsmen, for they know that you are a worthy woman. So in the Hebrew Bible, Ruth came after Proverbs to illustrate this virtuous or worthy woman. And so I think what we're going to see as we go throughout this is we're going to see a worthy man in Boaz. He's called that in 2:1. We're going to see a worthy woman in Ruth, and we're going to see a very dynamic character in Naomi. So let's go ahead and get into chapter 1. In these days, when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went to the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, husband of Naomi, died, and she was left there with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah. The name of the other was Ruth. They lived about 10 years. And both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. So we read a pretty tragic beginning to this book. You have Elimelech, the patriarch of the family, and Elimelech, as he travels to Moab, his motivation for this is because there's a famine in the land. Now, an interesting textual note about this is you'll look in verse 1. Elimelech comes from Bethlehem. In Hebrew, Bethlehem means house of bread. So the irony, of course, in this is that you have a man who comes from the house of bread, but then there's a famine in the house of bread. So then he goes to Moab to find bread. And bread's going to be pretty consistent throughout this. There's a lot of gluten throughout the book of Ruth. And as you read what happens here, Elimelech dies. Mahlon, who is the husband of Ruth, you read that in chapter 4, verse 10. Mahlon dies. Chilion, the husband of Orpah, dies. And then it's just left with Naomi and her two daughter-in-laws, Ruth and Orpah. Verse 6. Then Naomi arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited the people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. So by this point, they've been in the land for 10 years. After Elimelech and the two sons have died, Naomi hears that there is now food back in it. And I want to point out something that's going to become very important later. You'll look in verse 7 with me. After it says they set out, she gives them the blessing in verse 8. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you've dealt with the den and with me. Notice that phrase. We're going to come back to it. May the Lord deal kindly with you. So after then, she bids them farewell. Verse 10, they said to her, no, we will return to your people. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have no hope, even if I should have a husband this night and bear sons, would you therefore wait if they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marriage? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone against me. Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. So again, chapter 1's very tragic. Even after her husbands have died, Naomi hears that there's a glimmer of hope that she can return home and essentially just glean in the fields and perhaps find enough to eat, perhaps find enough to live off of. But even then, she recognizes she is too old to find a husband to redeem her, and she's too old then to have children. And within this culture, without a husband to redeem her and without sons to provide for her, she was going to be living a life of destitution pretty much the rest of her days. And so then, recognizing her own situation, she tells both of her daughters-in-law, y'all stay. Stay here, find husbands. Please do what's best for you. But then they both recognize, no, we want to go with you. And then it tells us then in verse 15, and verse 14, then they lifted up their voices again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Orpah decides to stay in Moab, but Ruth decides to return to Israel, to Judah, with her mother-in-law. Now, one thing I want us to note here is already just the shift and the contrast we're seeing between these two women. It is told to us earlier in the text that Naomi had told them, go back. Ruth is going to be a little bit tenacious here. She's going to fight against her mother-in-law. She says in verse 15, Naomi says, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Now, very, very important what's said here. Your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. Orpah not only returned to Moab to be with her family, but also she was returning to Moab to be with the pagan gods. So when Orpah made the decision to return to Moab, not only was she leaving Naomi and Ruth, but also she was leaving the God of Israel. But then Ruth comes back and says, verse 16, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my God, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and also more, if anything but death parts me from you. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So by this point in the story, Ruth has declared, I am returning with you. Now again, notice verse 17, may the Lord do so to me. You'll notice the term used for Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. That is the word for Yahweh, the covenant term of God. Ruth is not only accepting Naomi, but she's accepting the God of Israel. Now, we don't know what happened in the 10 years, but I think we're seeing that Elimelech, Naomi, and probably Mahlon have had an influence on Ruth. Not only has Ruth picked up a family, but Ruth has also picked up belief and faith in the God of Israel. So when she makes the decision to return to Israel, she's going as a God-fearer. She's going as a believer in God. And this faith is going to sustain her through the rest of the book. And so then verse 19, the two of them went on till they came to Bethlehem. When they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? She said to them, do not call me Naomi, but call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? Verse 21, I'm going to say, is really the theme verse of the book that we're going to see. Naomi here says, I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Now, you'll notice, first of all, a few things about this. She did not leave Bethlehem full. She left Bethlehem in a state of a famine. And whenever she gets to Moab then, she does have food temporarily. But then when it becomes short there, she returns to Israel, hoping that she's going to find food again. Now, here giving you an outline of the book of Ruth, chapters 1 and 2 are going to be about the filling of Naomi with food. Chapters 3 and 4 are going to be about the filling of Naomi's family. By the end of this lesson in 15 minutes, I think y'all will agree with me that this book should be called Naomi. This book should not be called Ruth. It is a horrible title for this book. Because this book is all about the filling of Naomi. As you look at the relationship between them, even in chapter 1, Ruth is introduced as almost a supporting character. Naomi's the one who's lost everything, and Ruth is going to be the means through which Naomi's going to be filled. But as you get to the very beginning of the book, both her stomach and her family's emptied. She's lost her son, she's lost her husband, and she also is extremely hungry, and God's going to provide for her. So verse 22, when Naomi returned, Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, was with her, who returned from the country of Moab. They came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So now chapter 2 is going to be pretty much one day. With the exception of the very final verse, chapter 2 is going to provide for us one day. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Anything about that verse stick out to you? What's Boaz there referred to as? A worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. This is the same phrase that's used over in 3:11 of Ruth. I think what we're going to see is Ruth and Boaz are matched for each other. A worthy woman is going to find a worthy man by the end of this chapter. Verse 2. Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said, "Go, my daughter." Now, Ruth here is saying, "Let me go to the field and glean so that I might find favor in his eyes." I would say this is referring to Boaz. Some may not, but it really seems she's referring to Boaz here. Now, let's talk about gleaning a little bit. In this culture, gleaning was pretty much the lowest form of income that you could have. Gleaning was getting the leftover scraps. The reapers are going to be the one who get the best of the harvest. The reapers are going to be the one who get the first crop, the first fruits, and the best. Gleaning is essentially, in our culture, the same as picking up aluminum cans on the side of the road. You're not going to make a living from it. You're barely going to eat from it. And at best, you may survive off of it. So when she says, "I'm going to glean off the field," essentially she's saying, "I'm doing the very lowest that can be done in order to try to possibly get food for us." I've always wondered what's going on with Orpah at this time. You know, probably Orpah was remarried, living a comfortable life in Moab at this time. And Ruth has given all that up so she can glean in a field. Verse 3. So Ruth set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field that belonged to Boaz, who was in the clan of Elimelech. So verse 3, she goes to the field after the reapers, and she happened to come. The Hebrew here says literally, she chanced a chance. So it's really an emphasis on this, that she chanced a chance to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Now I think we recognize it's not just chance that she ends up in the field of Boaz. She's ending up in the field of Boaz because of the providence of God. God's secret hand is guiding the events in this book, and he's going to bring about great things by the end of it. Verse 4, "Behold, Boaz came to Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' They answered, 'The Lord bless you.' The very first thing out of Boaz's mouth is a blessing to God. Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?' The servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, 'She is the young Moabite servant. She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Lest your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged you, young men, not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? What was her purpose in going out to this field? Verse 2, let me go glean after him in whose sight I shall find favor. So pretty much, verse 10, she has found favor in his eyes. She has accomplished and had a successful day by lunchtime. So by lunch, Boaz has already noticed her. He's already said, not only am I going to let you glean, but I'm going to let you have even more than this. Now, also interesting about this, if you go back to the book of Leviticus, and you look in Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 down through verse 11, gleaning was not allowed to be done in your own field. Because whenever gleaning, that was to be done for the poor and the foreigners. And so when Boaz tells her here, not only then, verse 8, do not glean in any other field or leave this one alone, but keep close to my young women. Essentially what he's saying here is, I'm going to let you do what really I can't allow anyone else to do because you're poor and a foreigner. That was the law of Leviticus. Boaz is a holy man. I don't think he's breaking the law here. But gleaning was only supposed to be done by the poor and the destitute. She's both by this point. And you'll notice her reaction. After Boaz gives her security and gives her assurance, she says, why are you doing this to me? I'm a foreigner. I mean, I'm a Moabitess. Why in the world are you doing this to me? Verse 11, Boaz answered her, all that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. How you left your father and mother and native land and came to a people you did not know. The Lord repay you for what you've done, and a full reward has been given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wing you've come to take refuge. Then she said, I found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. Boaz rewards her faithfulness and her selflessness. Ruth is going to be seen as a purely selfless person. And even the work ethic, whenever he was asked, who is this woman? She was said, she's been gleaning ever since morning. She only stopped for a short rest. If you go back, and we don't have the time to do this, but if you go back to Proverbs 31 and you read the list of characteristics of that woman, she is going to match nearly every single one of them. And one of the qualities of the worthy woman is she's up till dawn. She's up from dawn till night, and she has a hard work ethic. It's here described of Ruth as well. But just as Ruth is going to be the selfless one, Boaz is going to be the gracious giver. His grace and his love are extending to her. As you go throughout the rest of chapter 2, it's pretty much just topping himself. I mean, Boaz has already given her everything that she could have asked for. But then as you go through the rest of chapter 2, he's going to provide for her security. He's going to let her reap. He is going to give her food. He's going to give her drink. He's going to go above and beyond and bless her with everything that she could ask for. And then as we finish the chapter in verse 19, as she returns, her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today? Where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Naomi also said to her, the man is close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. And Ruth the Moabite said, besides, he said to me, you shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all of my harvest. Naomi said to Ruth, my daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you should go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted. So she kept close with all the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So by the end of chapter 1, Ruth and Naomi are empty. They're hungry, they're starving. By the end of chapter 2, Ruth and Naomi are filled with food. God has filled them. It even tells us a bit earlier in the text in verse 14, Ruth ate until she was satisfied. And then, even at the end of the day, Boaz gives to her, in verse 17, about an ephah of barley, which is 22 liters. He has given her 22 liters of barley. Now, how can two women eat 22 liters of barley? I think two teenage guys could probably do that. But two women eating 22 liters of barley. I mean, essentially, I think what the text is showing us here is Boaz is providing for Ruth and Naomi anything above what they could have imagined. So while at the end of chapter 1 they were empty, by the end of chapter 2, God, through Boaz, through Ruth, has filled Naomi. And she even says of him in verse 20, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." That's what she said in chapter 1, verse 8. "May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me." So just as Ruth had dealt kindly with Naomi, the exact same thing is then said of Boaz. "Just as you have dealt kindly with me, Boaz has now dealt kindly with us." So God essentially is rewarding the selflessness of Ruth and of Naomi. Now, Ruth is going to be a pretty static good character. She throughout the book is going to be seen as a selfless giving person. Naomi is like this in the book. She's happy, she's sad. She's content, she's discontent. She's sad, she's not sad. She's full, she's empty. I mean, Naomi's going to be the one who you see this shift in all throughout the book. But by the way, the time we get to the end of chapter 2, Naomi's going to be satisfied and full. Now, as we get into chapter 3, Naomi's stomach has been filled. Again, chapters 1 and 2 deal with her being filled with food. 3 and 4 deal with the filling of her family. So now what we're going to see is God is going to fill up the family of Ruth and Naomi. Now, a bit of context to this. If you go back to the book of Deuteronomy and you read them chapter 25, Leviticus 25 as well, we won't take the time to do this, but both of those chapters deal with a redeemer. The Old Testament law in about 5 different verses deals with a redeemer. A redeemer had multiple purposes. They redeemed land. That had, if you had someone to die, they would redeem land. If there was land that was sold, they would redeem. They would also redeem the wife. So what would happen in Israelite culture was, if you have a husband and wife, the husband dies, the husband's brother will then redeem the wife so that she can then have children, she can have providers. God is taking care of the women through the redeemer. What we're going to see is God provides for them a redeemer. So as we get into chapter 3, verse 1, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whom young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash therefore and anoint yourself and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor and do not forsake yourself. Do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go and uncover his feet and lie down and he will tell you what to do." She replied, "All that you say I will do. All you say I will do." So in the next verses, what we're going to see is Ruth fulfills everything that her mother-in-law told her to do. And this is there's no way about this. This is a strange story. What happens in the next few verses is Boaz is going to be essentially in the barn. He's going to be after the threshing. He's going to be at the threshing floor. And as he's sleeping, he's going to have his feet covered. Naomi tells Ruth to do this, and she does it. Ruth pretties herself up. She puts oil on herself so that she smells pretty. And then she goes down to the barn, and she sits at the feet of Boaz. And then she sits at the feet of Boaz, and she uncovers his feet. And as she uncovers his feet, he then wakes up, and he sees her there, and he's a little bit startled. And then he says, "What are you doing here?" And then she says, you know, essentially, in a roundabout way, redeem me. I mean, this is really what she's asking about. If you go back to Ezekiel chapter 16, there's only a few cases in the Old Testament where we see this. Ezekiel chapter 16, I believe it's in 13 and 14, where we see this same idea given. What Ruth is doing is essentially she's saying, "Will you redeem me? Can I be your wife?" I mean, that's the short of it. Whenever she goes and uncovers his feet, it's an appeal, redeem me. Well, the reason I think she does this at night is so that she can be rejected in private. If Boaz wants to reject her, it can be done in private and there won't be shame brought to Naomi and to Ruth. But Boaz is going to say, essentially, "I can't do it because there's a closer relative. Again, Boaz is a godly man. Deuteronomy 25 stipulated, if there is a closer relative, that closer relative had to be the redeemer. Now, we don't know who the kinsman is. My personal view is it was probably one of the brothers of Elimelech. That would fit best with the text. But one of the closer relatives of Elimelech, who's still alive, is going to hopefully be the redeemer. And so that's why Boaz says at the end of the verse, verse 13, remain tonight and in the morning. If he will redeem you, good, let him do that. But if she is not willing to, if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until morning. And so then Boaz says, if he won't redeem you, I will. Again, she's looking pretty good. But let's again notice where we are. At the end of chapter 1, Ruth is empty. Naomi's empty. At the end of chapter 2, they're filled with food. Both of them, their stomachs are full. At the end of chapter 3, their family's still empty. I mean, they still don't have a redeemer who's going to provide sons for them. They still don't have a redeemer who's going to buy the land. They still don't have a redeemer who is going to help them. They're empty at this point. But even as you look at the end of chapter 3, it tells us in verse 15, Boaz says, bring the garment you're wearing and hold it out. So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. So 6 measures of barley, that's about 89 pounds. Boaz gives her 89 pounds of barley. And again, this just shows us the character of Boaz. In chapter 2, he gave her 22 liters. 22 liters of barley. In this case, he gives her 89 pounds of barley she has on her back. And you'll notice that as we get into verse 17, she says, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. Again, see our key word there? This is the same word used back in 121. God is essentially saying, even though you currently don't have a redeemer, do not be empty-handed. I'm giving you 89 pounds of barley. I'm still providing for you. It's just not happened yet. So then we get into chapter 4, verse 1. Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down. And behold, the redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, turn aside here, friend, and sit down. And he turned aside and sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. So they sat down. Now, if you look at what happens here, there's a few differences with what's recorded in Deuteronomy 25, but a lot of similarities. And essentially what happens in these verses is Boaz and the kinsmen go to the 10 elders of the city. And the first thing he says is, Naomi has this property of land that needs to be redeemed. Will you redeem it? He says, sure, absolutely. It'll be of great use to me. But then, whenever Boaz tells the kinsman, who's never named, when he tells the kinsman, you also are going to need to, you know, redeem Ruth and have children by her and then redeem Naomi as well. He's like, I'm not doing that. he does not want to have to give his inheritance away to Ruth and Naomi. By taking on Ruth and Naomi, he would be giving up much of his inheritance. So I think what we're seeing is Boaz is seen as this worthy man. The kinsman is the unworthy man. And I think what, in my personal view of this, what's interesting is in the text, it seems that the kinsman is the one who deems Ruth not worthy, but I think ultimately the kinsman isn't worthy of Ruth. Ruth is the epitome of selflessness. She's the epitome of the virtuous woman. The kinsman isn't worthy of her. Boaz is worthy of her. A worthy man is going to find a worthy woman. So that's why we get into verse 10. Let's start in verse 9. Boaz tells the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I brought you to the hand of Naomi and all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Also Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead and his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of the native place. You are witnesses this day. And so as you get into verse 11 and 12, the people give him a blessing, but essentially what it's showing us, Naomi and Ruth are redeemed. This is going to be at a cost to Boaz, but out of selflessness, he does it. And then, this is where I'm going to say the book has a really bad name. As you get into the family that's given, verse 13, Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And he went into her and the Lord gave her conception and she bore a son. This is the last time that Ruth is mentioned in the book. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of seven of old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So ultimately, God has provided a redemption for Naomi. Really, I think what we've seen in both cases, Ruth is the one who back in 121 is empty. Naomi is ultimately the one, though. Naomi is ultimately the one who's empty. By the end of chapter 2, through Boaz, through Ruth, God provides for Naomi. Then in chapter 3, Ruth is rejected. And so then, Naomi's then rejected. But then by the end of chapter 4, Naomi's the one who then is redeemed. Naomi is the one who then has the child. And it's then through Naomi then that you see the child's name through happenings around that. And then as you get into the final few verses, we have a genealogy that ultimately leads to David. And I think that what this is showing us here is that just through a very inconsequential event in the history of Israel, God is bringing about a great king, and he's bringing about ultimately Jesus Christ through the story of Ruth. So that's the book of Ruth. That's the book of Ruth. It's a simple story, but it's just a pleasant story to see two lessons, just two very quick lessons. Number one, God provides for his people. God through all time has provided for his people. He provided for Naomi. He provided for Ruth. Second lesson, God has redeemed us. Boaz in many ways is a type of Christ. Many of the qualities that we see in Jesus are illustrated in Boaz. Personally, if I could name the book, I'd name it Boaz, because Boaz is the real savior of the story in this book. Boaz is the one who ultimately is the one who provides food, and Boaz is the one who provides redemption, and he goes above and beyond and gives every blessing he can to these women. He takes them out of destitution, and he gives them fulfillment, and that's ultimately what we find in Jesus. So go ahead and get out your psalm books with me, please. I know that was a whirlwind overview of the book of Ruth, but hopefully it was beneficial. The story of Ruth is one that I'm sure most of us have heard many times before, but it was at least good to revisit this old story and to draw a couple of lessons from it. So if anyone here this evening is empty, I mean, as you go throughout the book, Naomi is the one who just has this up and down relationship, the whole book. She's happy, she's sad, she's empty, she's full. She's content, she's discontent. I think Naomi in many ways exemplifies our lifestyle that we discussed this morning. So often there's an emptiness inside of us that we just don't know how to be filled. There's an emptiness that just consumes us, an emptiness that overtakes us. But it can only be filled in Jesus Christ. It can only be filled in God. If anyone needs the Lord this evening, come forward while we stand and while we sing.